From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Cheesecake Factory has the restaurant business, food prep, down to a science. Menu items are prepared to an exacting, uniform standard. Waste is minimal. Consistency is king. And the customer, in theory, gets a great meal on every plate. My guest today, surgeon and author Atul Gawande, says this may be the new model for American healthcare. Formula-driven with lots of central oversight, the restaurant chain model, to cut costs and deliver quality. Doctors on a short leash. Will it work? This hour on Point, Atul Gawande and the Cheesecake Factory model for healthcare. You can join the conversation. Would you like a side of fries with your appendectomy? The chain model, chain controls, is it inevitable? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Orkney Springs, Virginia, is surgeon and author Atul Gawande. He practices general and endocrine surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. He's professor of surgery at Harvard Medical School, a professor at the Harvard School of Public Health, author of The Checklist Manifesto and Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance, a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine since 1998. His latest article out this week is headlined Big Med. Atul Gawande, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
So we heard you on Morning Edition this week, and we had a lot more questions. We're glad you've joined us. There's a lot we want to look at here. But if I may just sweep all the way through, we'll come back to a ton of details here. We'll go right to your conclusion on this big piece. It looks at the Cheesecake Factory and this kind of model. And you say, we have let healthcare systems provide us with the equivalent of greasy spoon fare at four-star prices, and the results have been ruinous. What a dump we've been dining in, and we didn't even know it. Describe the problem for us. What is this greasy spoon we're getting our health care in?
Well, the way I think about it is, to make the comparison with Cheesecake Factory, they deliver 80 million meals a year at affordable prices with service that's very popular, and quality that people trust. When they go to doctors, they don't feel the same way, and there are millions of people across the country who turn to healthcare for, you name it, 40% of coronary artery disease patients in our communities get incomplete or inappropriate care. 60% of asthma, stroke, pneumonia patients get incomplete or inappropriate care. We are paying escalating costs for that, and we don't feel we're in a system that we are able to trust. We look for the people, we look for the great doctor, and we often do find them, but when it's putting a whole team of people together who actually work together and make sure things get done, We're constantly feeling like we're left holding the bag.
So you went out for dinner with your daughter and some friends at the Cheesecake Factory and got to thinking about this. And pretty soon you're thinking about a model for something really different. And before you know it, you're off talking with some examples of what you see as the kind of new wave here. And they've got video monitors in hospital rooms and central controls looking over the shoulder of doctors and enforcing standards and formula far, far from HQ. Draw that arc for us, Atul, from the kitchen at the restaurant to the hospital room.
Yeah, it's this queasy arc when I even think about it. But at the same time, here's the reality. I was struck that in March, the Cheesecake Factory got a new menu. They had 20 different things that their chefs had to cook all across the country in 160 different restaurants, and they rolled it out in 7 weeks. At the same time, almost within the same month, the American Association of Neurology rolled out its new headache guidelines for how to take care of people with severe migraine headaches. And the very first paragraph, they point out that their previous guidelines from 12 years before had identified 5 medications, any of which would have improved the lives of severe migraine patients substantially, and less than a third of those patients had even been offered it. And that was that what that said was, here was a place that could roll out a new idea in 7 weeks, and we in medicine hadn't been able to roll out proper headache treatments after 12 years.
So you describe a restaurant that can kind of turn a giant menu on a dime, and American medicine where best practices may remain ignored for a decade or more.
Exactly right. And with tremendous expense and cost to the system, as well as harm to people. So, you know, when I thought about it, what I thought was, well, we've taken a couple approaches to this. One is regulation. So we say, you know, let's have more rules to drive this into place. But that's about as likely to create great medicine as food inspectors are as likely to produce good food.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, some regulations necessary to make sure there's safety and so on in the system, but it doesn't make the care great.
The health inspector doesn't make the souffle.
Correct. We tried in managed care to have insurance companies, have reviewers on the phone who would call up and tell me, hey, you know, you can't have that MRI for your patient. They were gatekeepers, is what they called.
And the HMO model, yeah.
Yeah, the HMO model. We had a huge backlash against that. And in its place, what we've come to is really something that's looking more and more like what the restaurant industry looks like. We're creating large healthcare systems, healthcare conglomerates, really, that employ physicians and try to drive people to meet performance standards, quality measures, cost metrics, and so on. And, you know, the interesting thing, I came to the conclusion, and I'm part of this, you know, I've signed up as an employee in a large health system in Boston, but given the number of people required to make healthcare go well, I don't think we have a lot of choice. I think we're trying to figure out how to go from being cowboys to really being pit crews for patients.
You write, our costs are soaring. The service is typically mediocre. This is in the healthcare world. The quality is unreliable. It makes you afraid to get sick. You write, every clinician has his or her own way of doing things. The rates of failure and complication, not to mention costs for a given service, routinely vary by a factor of 2 or 3, even within the same hospital. Unacceptable. I mean, it's, you know, you're talking about sort of restaurant perfection and healthcare. You say greasy spoon.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that when I got behind the kitchen counter at a Cheesecake Factory and watched to see how they did it, what I imagined first was that they would have, you know, it would be crab cakes frozen in boxes that would be sent out and around, and that wasn't what it was. They make them from scratch in all of the restaurants.
So it's not just microwaving something shipped out from, I don't know where, some central kitchen. It's not that.
No. They have to make it. And that means they have to hire chefs that they, whose judgment they have to count on. Now, I thought then the second answer was, well, they have really detailed recipes. And they do. And then I watch them, you know, make the hibachi steak and the crab cakes. And I say, you know, where's the recipes? And the chefs, they point at their head and they go, I've got it right here. And so then you say, where is it that they are able to maintain service and efficiency and quality and consistency? And the answer was that they had every time a dish came off of the grill, it would pass in front of a manager who would look at it and say, who would grade it on a scale of 1 to 10 and say, this is a 9 or a 10, good enough to go out to the customer. 7 or 8, if you got to fix something here. 6, hey, scrap it, start all over again. And I couldn't imagine someone looking hour by hour at the work I do as a surgeon, saying, you know, this is what you really got to improve. This is not as good as what we stand for at Harvard. And yet, that is precisely the problem. A patient comes, you know, I talked to one of the managers. This brought it home for me.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to one of the managers. I said, "What have you ever thought to yourself when you go for healthcare? What if this was managed the way that I manage my own restaurant?" And he said, "All the time." His mother has Alzheimer's disease. He had just come the week before from a visit to the emergency room because she'd had a fainting episode. She was in the emergency room and got admitted overnight. There was one plan and a bunch of tests from the emergency room doctor. Then later that night, the physician on the floor that admitted her couldn't tell him what the results were or what the plan was, but had a different set of tests. The next day it was another team, and they had a completely different plan, which was sending her home. And it was one thing after the other. No one got a plan. No one could make it go straight. Thousands of dollars were spent. They never got the answers about what the results even were. It was enough to drive him crazy.
Healthcare, kind of a mess in that example. In the example or metaphor you're using, the Cheesecake Factory, pretty smooth-running operation. And the question here, whether that kind of oversight that you saw, back in the kitchen at Cheesecake Factory could come to medicine, and you're finding that already. I mean, we'll look at that, but you're finding outfits that already have a video camera in the hospital, in the room, looking over the shoulder of the doctor, the nurse, saying, hey, did you remember this, or have you got that going on, or shouldn't you do it this way?
Yeah, to me, this is, you know, the story that has been missed by all of the kind of reporting on what's going on in Washington with the left versus the right misses the reality that healthcare is changing dramatically in the last 2 to 3 years. A decade ago, the majority of physicians worked independently in practices that they own themselves. Today, 75% are now employees of larger health systems. And those big health systems, there's about 90 across the country that are the primary ones that are going to determine our future of whether we actually fix the cost problem or not.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American healthcare and whether it's about to go top-down, corporate, cookie-cutter maybe, whether doctors will serve up medicine the way chain restaurants serve up fries or you name it. Dr. Atul Gawande is with us, surgeon and author, author of the big piece in the New Yorker magazine this week called Big Med, where he compares how the Cheesecake Factory does its business, serves up that huge menu with consistent quality. Hey, it's not, Michelin rated, but it's good quality. And over a gigantic menu at a reasonable cost. Atul, we've got a lot of callers for you. There's more we want to learn, but let me bring in Jane calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Jane, you're on the air with Atul Gawande.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I really love what I'm hearing so far, and I'm just thinking of one question for the doctor, and I think you've hit on it in your talk just now. Of course we want quality, at least as good as Cheesecake Factory. But what about the human factor and all the variables that are inevitable there? Concerns that that much, as you're calling it, cookie-cutter, the cookie-cutterism mm-hmm. of it all would not allow for the human variables that we need. In other words, we need to kick things around with our doctors.
Absolutely. Jane, I'm glad you raised that. I mean, to be fair, I the cookie cutter phrase is mine. It's kind of a distillation of what Atul's saying, so I won't hang that on you, Atul. But, you know, a number of people I talked with about this article had it in summary, they have that kind of reaction. Look, I don't want some central HQ sending down orders or formula about exactly how I'm going to be treated. The human being, human body is nuanced. The relationship is personal. You can't do this like, a steak and fries from on high.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. The relationship that a physician has with a patient is all about the ability to hear a person's story, understand their priorities, and then help them deploy this immense capability in order to meet those priorities, get a team of people together to help them get there. Well, that's precisely what we don't do. My mother, I tell the story of her needing a knee replacement, mm-hmm. and we have fabulous places in Boston, and yet every doctor has their own way of doing things. In a funny way, I wanted a factory, and I found one at my hospital, a doctor who saw his job not just as what he does in the operating room, but in fact, of getting the entire team of people. It turned out I counted. There were 63 people involved in my mother's care from the moment of her diagnosis to the time she finally could leave the hospital with her cane. And what I saw was a new kind of doctor, not some outside bureaucrat, not an insurance company guy, not a government regulator, but a doctor who said, I am responsible for how everything from start to finish goes in this care, and I'm going to be responsible for the spread of good ideas. And that meant sometimes telling other doctors, this isn't the way we do this.
Mm-hmm.
We are all going to be in this together, and it's complicated. It's about the ability to build a team, to have somebody who says, look, I'm the pit chief, and I'm in charge, and we are, as a pit crew, going to be able to help this person all the way through at every step along the way.
What's the advantage
of high-tech stuff?
What's the advantage of having one sort of central, let's say, guy in this case, being able to say that? I mean, listeners could think, well, that's just going to override the nuances, the subtleties that the individual doctor sees. And by the way, I should point out, your pit crew chief there is also mandating the lowest cost. Now, we need to cut costs here, but, you know, sometimes the patient's saying, well, I want the best.
Yeah. And believe me, with my mother, what I was looking for was both a humane experience
mm-hmm.
and as technically optimal an experience for her goals as could be achieved. I wanted her to be mm-hmm. treated well in every sense of the word.
Sure.
And that in a system where we currently have every part of care broken up and, you know, it's specialist after specialist and no one putting the big picture together,
mm-hmm.
unless there is the, you know, the coach, the pit chief, the person at the top saying, we're all putting this together, you actually don't get nuance. You don't get anybody paying attention. She had 8 different physical therapists over the course of many days of care. And if the physical therapist number one said, here's my plan for you today, and the one in the afternoon came in and said, no, 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 that's crazy. This is the plan. And then the next day they said, no, 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 this is the plan. It drives you crazy. But that's the norm in medicine. And instead, you finally had someone who said, our goals are, we are working together. She wants to be able to walk within 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to avoid being on narcotic medication as much as possible. And everybody got on the same page and were able to execute that plan. And that is not the norm.
What does it look like when what you call big med gets revved up? You've got an example in here of Steward Healthcare. Now, this is owned by a big investment group, and they're buying hospitals, and they're beginning to put something like this together. Describe what's going on there, what it looks like on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, what we have now is about 90 health systems across the country that are about $1 billion or more in size. You know, we're talking about organizations as big as Harley-Davidson and beyond.
Big Med.
And they employ, I'm part of a system that employs 6,000 doctors. We have 60,000 people on staff, 3 times bigger than the town I grew up in Ohio. And yet, what we are, they're a mix. They're from the not-for-profit world to the for-profit world, and they're all producing, in some way, production line medicine. They're all trying to organize the care so you have more consistent knee replacement results, better results for your heart attack care, better results to prevent infections and things like that.
And you sat in a central control room far from a lot of these hospitals that was looking over their shoulder and enforcing, in a way, that routinization. What did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the puzzle to me was if you're a system that has 10 hospitals in it, and Steward Healthcare is a system that was built around a group of Catholic hospitals, and they've added to them now in Massachusetts and then going beyond. And if they were going to arrive at some idea that there is a Steward level of quality that you could trust and believe in, how in the world did they do that? And I they were good enough to let me in and watch. And in their intensive care units, for example, one of the most expensive places in the system and also one of the most risky and dangerous places,
yeah.
They had cameras in every ICU watching every patient.
From a central, distant sort of tele-ICU team headquarters that wasn't even on the grounds.
Yeah, it was a command center in a suburb of Boston that they could watch across their hospitals. And the fascinating thing was that they'd get the doctors together and they'd say, what are our goals for the patient with an infection, you know, a sepsis syndrome, a systemic infection? What are our goals to prevent patients from getting pneumonia on the ventilators? And then they'd say, well, we're going to watch and see if we're able to meet those goals.
So there's the coordination. What about the intervention done by this distant doctor looking through that high-def video camera, zooming in on everything? What kind of suggestions or orders did they have?
Yeah, so that's the fascinating thing, is that this is where the plug has to meet the electric socket. It's, for all the millions in technology of watching, it's a human being standing on one end of a camera watching another human being and saying, are you sure you washed your hands? And it's that human.
And not just any human being, but a nurse or a doctor who's not used to being overseen like that.
That's right. Someone looking over our shoulders in ways that we haven't been used to. Now, the person on the other end is not some insurance company person, but in fact, another ICU doctor looking across all of the kind of standards that we say we are supposed to meet, that we are going to wash our hands, that we are going to make sure that certain medications aren't forgotten that we're supposed to be using. And, you know, it's perfectly all right for the person at the front line to say, yeah, we're not using this medicine because that patient has an allergy you didn't know about, you know, silly. But the fact that there's someone watching over your shoulder and reminding you, say, you know, we're shooting for this high level of quality. Are you delivering it? You know, you should remember that we're supposed to wash our hands, or there's a checklist for how you're supposed to put in that central line that could be that could cause a terrible side effects.
Way beyond hand washing. I mean, you're talking about a rollout of full scale treatment protocols here to be followed to the more or less to the letter.
Well, so yes, the part of the concept of and you bring this up with the question of the cookie cutter is that making a system of care doesn't mean that you want people's brains turned off. It will be a failure if that turns out to be the case. Part of my research life, and in the book The Checklist Manifesto, I wrote about designing a checklist for surgery. Well, half of the checklist is having everybody around an operating room table ask each other, do you understand the goals for this operation, how long it's going to take, what the equipment is needed, so that it's kind of like a huddle before everybody then goes to do their part. And a lot of what's cookie cutter is making sure that you have a team that actually works and uses their brains to solve their problems in front of them, rather than fragments where stuff just falls between the cracks.
As you write, the command center concept of this high-def video remote view provides the possibility of command. We're going to talk in just a second here with the president of Steward Healthcare, who's they're right in the middle of this. Atul Gawande is with us from New Yorker, a surgeon himself. One call, then we'll go to Steward. Call Carl in Waynesboro, Virginia. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Carl, Waynesboro, Virginia. I'm a retired family practice doctor.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to make a comment here. The guest speaker has basically forgotten that there's already a physician in place to coordinate all this stuff, and he's the family practice doctor. Family practice doctor has totally been forgotten in today's society. A lot of people coming out of medical school really don't want to get into family practice. The pay is okay, but it's not the best, and they go elsewhere. And obviously, my comment about the forgotten physician is obvious because this man, who's obviously very intelligent, has basically forgotten that this man's already in place. Now, I understand that when I was practicing as a family doctor, we were in ICU and stuff, but I had many specialists on call for me who were there to help me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the one who had all this stuff, established, and I knew what was going on. I knew what other doctors were doing, and the patients, families and stuff would come to me to ask questions. And I just think that instead of getting big brother, my gosh, I can't imagine somebody looking over me when I'm trying to do a procedure. To have big brother look at me and stuff, you know, it's just that we need to maybe go back to an individual doctor taking care of being responsible for the patient.
Dr. Carl, we've got it right there. We've got it, and I really appreciate your call. If I may, let me take that straight to the front lines here. Atul Gawande, stand by. We happen to have with us as well right now from Boston, Dr. Mark Girard. He's president of Steward Healthcare Network, oversees 2,700 doctors. He oversees that clinical program in the tele-ICU command center that we were talking about. He also is a practicing interventional radiologist. Mark Girard, Dr. Girard, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, and hi, Tom.
Hi. You hear our retired doctor calling in from Virginia and saying, look, we already have, and we have had for some time, somebody who can stay on top of all this. It's the family practice doctor. They're coordinating. They're in charge. He doesn't need big brother or big med, as Atul Gawande calls it. What's the advantage that Steward brings to the healthcare scene, or is there one, over the traditional family doctor who's kind of keeping an eye on a patient they've known ideally for a long time?
So obviously that's a complicated question, but it's really about augmenting that fundamental relationship between the person's primary caregiver and the patient, and augmenting those services in whatever environment you happen to be. So in the case of our tele-ICU program, mm-hmm. the doctors on the, you know, in the central command center have met all the other doctors that take care of the patients that are there. The protocols that are agreed upon are agreed upon by all the doctors ahead of time. So it's really about a team-based approach rather than big brother watching somebody that they've never met before. And medicine has gotten so complex, and there's so much potential for things to go wrong that in this case, two heads are clearly better than one.
What do you think about Atul Gawande's metaphor of the cheesecake factory? Are you the cheesecake factory of healthcare?
Not sure for the cheesecake factory of healthcare, but the principles of team-based care and the principles of trying to achieve the highest quality care you can in the most cost-efficient manner that you can. Notice I didn't say lowest cost. I said quality and cost efficiency are principles that we need in medicine, and it will result in better care.
But you've got something here. I mean, you've got big investors. Cerebras is big. They've invested in a lot of industries. They get in for a reason. The reason is they've got a different model that they think will change things, make a profit, and ideally make a high quality business. So what's the big change that you talk with other medical professionals about bringing? What is it that you're going to bring?
Yeah, so Steward is based on this principle of the Steward Community Care Model, and it's a response to the cost crisis in healthcare. We're moving away from just focusing on quality and then cost separately, but getting to this concept of value, which is quality and, capital A, cost efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the solutions to that is to do the right care, the right amount of care in the right environment or the right location. So so-called right sizing the care and right siting the care. And one of our observations has been that very high quality care is practiced in the community, both in the ambulatory environment, as the family practice doctor mentioned, mm-hmm. but also in community hospitals. And a lot of that care ends up in other environments that are more expensive and with doctors maybe not practicing at the top of their game and maybe an unnecessary specialist, those sorts of things. So the concept is, in the Steward Community Care Model, is to bring the care in the right location and to right site and right size the care as a solution to the value paradigm.
How does big scale help you do that?
So scale helps you because out in the community, you may not have the scale to do the cost-efficient side. So if we need to provide services like 24/7 ICU coverage, in each small hospital, you can't do that cost-effectively, and so compromises are made. But by employing technology and scale via something like the tele-ICU, you can provide that coverage in a cost-efficient manner.
Dr. Gawande also compares you guys to CVS, Walmart, Pizza Hut. Okay, we'll come back and look at that. Can you stick with us for a minute, Dr.
Sure,
Gerard?
Absolutely.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American healthcare and whether it's about to go top-down corporate, whether doctors will serve up medicine the way chain restaurants serve up fries or you name it. Atul Gawande is with us, surgeon, writer, public health researcher. There's a big article in New Yorker this week headlined Big Med, comparing the Cheesecake Factory model to what may be coming for a lot of American medicine. An early example of that, already up on the rails and doing things on a big scale, he says, is Steward Healthcare. President of Steward Healthcare Network, Dr. Mark Gerard, is with us from Boston today. He oversees their clinical programs, the tele-ICU that looks in with the high-def video cameras and a lot more at Steward. He's with us. We've got all kinds of responses here. First, Atul, for you, people thinking about the Cheesecake Factory. Kevin says, what can they learn from the Cheesecake Factory? Well, they certainly get a lot of practice, hospitals with heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer from those who eat there all the time. Okay, there's one view of that menu. This one may be for you. Mark Korb says, Cheesecake Factory run the way airlines are. Smaller seats, extra charges for baggage, sit down, shut up, and get strip search. So, you know, anytime you get big, people get a little wary, so we'll watch that. Others, Chase says, single payer, Medicare for all, universal health care, anything else is a Band-Aid. And Ellen is listening closely. She wants to know if the chief of the pit crew, the kind of overseeing here from a distance, can shift from a primary doctor to a specialist in a minute. Are the records electronic with the critical points for the patient noted up top? I hope so. Atul Gawande, you were there. I mean, describe just how much information that remote team has as they look over the shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, they have the same records everybody else on the bedside team has. You know, part of the fascinating thing here is that these big organizations, as they are coming together, you know, pulling a dozen hospitals together and dozens of clinics, what their fundamental question is can they attract patients? And if it is that you end up feeling like you're going through the security line at the airport in order to go to a doctor, you're going to go somewhere else.
Yep.
They are not going to attract you. The fascinating thing, Dr. Carl, the family practice doctor, raised the question of, you know, we've got the family practice doctor sitting right there ready to be the project manager when a third of patients on Medicare have 10 or more specialists as it is. And the really fascinating thing is that these large organizations are rediscovering the family practice doctor and the primary care physician and starting to move them into positions where they have larger teams and an ability to follow patients much more carefully all the way along. In some sense, they are becoming another source of a command center around what happens for patients as they go through the system. I think we're struggling for the question of how do you get a system to work for the sake of the people that we're supposed to be serving. We need to have that human relationship that they have someone they can trust in the system. But then they also need that person to be able to make sure that everybody else is on the same page. And I think that these efforts like creating command centers, creating electronic information, creating, you know, physicians who are new kinds of physicians, becoming managers of the 10,000 people who go through the ICU or the 100,000 people who go through all of the family practices in a given clinic, they are a new thing for us.
You've got a description here of banks of computer screens with live feeds of cardiac monitor readings. This is in the remote observation post or command center. Radiology imaging scans there, laboratory results from those ICU patients. And you've got a lot of metaphors here. I mean, you say market-wise, over time, people need a place to sleep. They may be drawn to the bed and breakfast, but if it's that the private family practice, but if it's kind of dowdy and funky and the plumbing doesn't work, they'll get off to the Hyatt in a hurry. That would propel people in this direction. Of course, there are concerns about scale and market power from the other side. You hear in that in the airline comparison. Melanie in Nashville, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to speak to the family practice issue as well as the quality of health care.
Yes, ma'am.
I think the cookie-cutter idea is okay, maybe. But the problem for the patient is that there is no standard of care for anything.
Now.
There's no standard of care
now.
And I get my health care from a regional health care facility that has an absolutely fabulous reputation. So I don't doubt the ability of the physician to see me. What I doubt is that a patient has to be responsible for their health care. They have to be able to participate in their health care. There is no team approach. Where I am, I hear about it. But, I'm reading it in other places.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly don't have a team. I have to do my own team. My primary care doesn't make referrals that I ask her to make. And, they don't even, it would be good if they would do laboratory work prior to the time that the patient is to come in.
So sure would.
All of that will be finished
and
complete. It would be good if they would have a team. But I don't see my primary care. In fact, I think it's a waste of money for me to have a primary care.
And Melanie, you speak to a reality that a lot of people get to know if they get into the healthcare system. Mark Girard, Do you have the answer to that? I mean, people, yeah, we hear from primary care physicians saying we're the coordinator, but you also know very well that a lot of people see that fall apart. They feel like there's nobody watching over the whole thing. Atul describes that. People feel like they're on their own. In your system, does that get changed, Mark?
The answer is yeah. And the obvious point is that we're not meeting the need of that person. And we in medicine need to reorganize in a way that we meet exactly those needs. And the way we're going to do it is through scale. Scale allows you to deploy information technology to achieve exactly what that person was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You need team-based care to meet the entire needs of a patient. You know that we've had a huge explosion of information in healthcare, and it is simply unreasonable to think that one person can be all-knowing when it comes to healthcare. So healthcare has become a team game, and the question is, how can we get that team to deliver on every single issue that a patient needs? And that's what we're trying to do. It is clear that healthcare is delivered to one person at a time, but there is scale in that interaction. It's done at one community at a time, and it's done at a scale of multiple communities together. And then the idea is to leverage resources across whichever scale is appropriate to truly deliver quality and cost efficiency.
And look over the shoulder to make sure it happens. Matt in Stamford, Connecticut. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Fascinating topic, and while I've been on the line, a lot of fascinating comments as well. My comment stems to, you're talking about a couple of different things. One, the need to deliver in the complexity of healthcare environment, the need to deliver an appropriate team-based approach,
yeah.
And also the introduction of standards of care. And to me, the two are sort of juxtaposed positions. My personal experience is we've had a lot of, in where I live, we've had a lot of good healthcare team-based approach. But in terms of the implementation of standards, I see a whole lot of problems because, frankly, I don't see doctors, such as the earlier call from Dr. Carl,
mm-hmm.
Ego-wise, willing to submit to someone overseeing and critiquing their practice. And again, I don't have any negative sort of something in the closet, bad experience with healthcare.
Yep.
But I look at the people who have who I know who've gone into medicine, and I look at some of the egos that I know, and I look at the parallels in other industries, and I just don't see it happening.
Let us put that right in Atul Gawande's lap. Matt, thanks for that. Atul, how about it? Doctors' egos, they won't submit to this.
I couldn't agree more. You know, we've rewarded, hired, and trained people to be cowboys. But it's pit crews that we need. The average patient who's in a hospital has 15 different clinicians involved. And if they don't take the time and aren't interested in picking up the phone and talking to one another and making a plan with the patient, then the experience you get is what we have today. The experiment we're going through right now is whether we are able to shift the system from fee-for-service, which pays every little component individually,
mm-hmm.
to one that has all these different kind of reforms underway that are paying what people are calling global payment, which is a sort of bundled payment for the whole team to deal with it. And then can that team work together and actually make it go through? This is about year two or year three of this experiment in trying to bring this across entire populations. And the early goings are pretty rough.
But are doctors going to feel diminished? I mean, after all, your cook at the Cheesecake Factory may have a lot of pride in his work or her work, but he's not going to feel the same as a chef at Per Se or some super fancy restaurant in New York or Paris. A lot of doctors see themselves in that bigger toque.
Yeah, the fascinating thing is that the Per Se's of the world are kind of like our academic health centers. They are creating new dishes, new kinds, in our case, of treatments. And then the question is, how do those ideas get out across the country? If everywhere is an experiment, nowhere is there actually learning or any kind of rolling out of what has been learned. You're right at getting at the ego question, that here we have approaches like how you deal with a simple migraine headache, And there's actual evidence that there are 8 different medications, including a dietary supplement, that improve the lives of severe migraine patients, and less than 13% of physicians actually offer it to their patients.
So who's going to routinize? Who's going to push that out? Sally in Bristol, Connecticut. Sally, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question has to do with implementation.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the doctor. There's nothing wrong with giving effective medicine. But he stated in the first part of your show that 75% of doctors are hired by companies. And these companies are making billions, as it is, with doctors practicing ineffective medicine.
Mm.
So how are we going to get this into place? Who is going to be involved? Is the government has to be involved? And, of course, if the government gets involved, then there has to be regulations. And we all know that Republicans, they don't want regulations of any kind. So who's going to be involved?
Sally, let us pick it straight up. Our time is growing a little short here. But Atul, what about what's going to drive this cheesecakeification of American healthcare?
Yeah, the fascinating thing is whether it's single payer or entirely private insurance plans, it's all pushing the same direction, which is that it's wanting organizations that take responsibility for producing results. And the bigger organizations tend to do it faster, tend to do it, and tend to attract people to come and work in those organizations for them.
So you think the market will do it itself?
Well, so yes. The short answer is that whether it's let me put it this way: there is a fundamental role government has to play here. The market plays a key role in allowing these organizations to form. Whether they'll be small or big to win, whether people will prefer the big ones or not, we'll see. The key part, though, is that government has to provide transparency. So we have to have information about which places are doing well and which places are not. And we have to have an understanding about what the real prices are in the system, which is often actually obscured by everybody who don't want to let people see what the real costs are. And finally, if there are monopolies that start hurting innovation and, mm-hmm. and care, government sometimes might have to step in to break them up like they did with AT&T.
I mean, one wonders if that'll happen. I mean, you described, for example, Cleveland Clinic. They got 9 regional hospitals, Northeast Ohio, health centers in Florida, Toronto, Las Vegas, Abu Dhabi. We've got Mary who writes to us online, Atul. She says the problem, for example, with the Cleveland Clinic is the market has been allowed to reduce everything to one healthcare provider. She worries about that. I mean, you say that there will be, if we get these really big Walmart-scale providers, you'll have to have some kind of government oversight to keep from having potential Walmart downsides.
That's right. You know, just this week, what passed in Massachusetts was a cost law that aimed to try to deal with this. And the struggle between the sides that said, look, you got to regulate and break up these systems and leave them small, and the others who wanted to say, no, we need to have computerization and lots of things that need size, that struggle was fascinating to watch. The way they came out was by saying, we are going to set a target. They're going to have a goal for what costs will be, but no real teeth behind it. Instead, there is transparency. They're aiming for data to be the driver here by saying that that failure to meet costs by any health system will be publicized, and that the quality of their care and their results will be exposed to all. And so it's this mix of being uncertain ourselves as a country about how much we think this will work through regulation versus letting information and the market succeed while we try to aim for universal health care.
Mark Girard, you described these advantages of scale and teamwork up front. Let's say your business at Steward just goes like gangbusters and you take over big. What's to keep you on the other side from, you know, sort of squeezing people when you get that big scale and dominance that comes with this, and maybe, you know, cutting back for a little extra quarterly profit?
So again, I think the new paradigm is this value concept, which is quality and cost efficiency. If we do something that leads to bad outcomes or less quality, people won't stand for it. I think the payers as well won't stand for it. In a lot of towns,
Walmart is the only game in town. What if you get that kind of dominance? I mean, you must aim for it.
Right. Well, but in our industry, there's that other third party, which is actually the person paying for the goods and services. And the payers, in a way, can play some of that function of making sure that we're...
I mean, insurers, let's
quality.
Say.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the employers, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The employers are a big part of this picture because they pay a large majority of the health insurance premium, as do people that that get the care. But it's really a new value paradigm. It's quality and cost efficiency. And I think if you truly try to do that, then you'll avoid the notion of going for more of the cost efficiency to squeeze profits, because then you'll sacrifice quality. And the idea is to keep the right balance between those two initiatives.
Atul, you're a surgeon. Are you ready to hang up your cowboy spurs and be part of the Pitt crew here? Does it feel like a diminution for you?
You know, we had this discussion just not too long ago. My chief of general surgery sent an email around pointing out the difference in costs for one of the most common operations we do in my division, mm-hmm. which is hernia repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And the different docs use between $125 worth of mesh per operation mm-hmm. to $15,000.
Wow.
And the question that went around was, could we agree on using the less expensive mesh? Did we see any difference? And the answer was, we didn't see any difference. We didn't even know the costs were different. And we agreed by the afternoon to do it. If it had been a different person, if it had been the insurance company, or even the chief of the hospital, we would have told them to go, you know,
take a leap.
Themselves telling us what to do about our
But operation. Change is coming to you, and the clock is coming to us. Atul Gawande writes Big Med in The New Yorker. Atul, thank you for being with us. Dr. Mark Girard, president of Steward Healthcare Network, thanks to you as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Interesting. This is On Point.